Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening, or good morning in the case of our guest tonight. Feed Your Head. I'm Ruth Anna Marte Fio, and I am so happy to have with us Ayad Kupder from Damascus. He is in Syria, and it's 2 o'clock. So what can I say? Ayad, thank you so much for being up for this.
Hello.
And we're both having tea, so that works. Now,
I love tea.
you're an engineer and producer at Syrian TV. So
yeah.
You are very aware of things that are going on. And
actually, I'm too aware.
Yeah. If there, sometimes it's, you know, once you know, and you can't go back. But I know, I'm sure you have those moments when you just wish that maybe just for a few days, I wouldn't know all these things. But, you know, you're doing so much with your interviews that you give and then the news that you're turning out at Syrian TV. So I think that, I know it gets rough sometimes. You know, Americans just, a little over a year ago, were very big on not bombing Syria. And we called the Congress people, even little towns put up great big banners, you know, no bombs on Syria. And now, through the back door, Obama has managed to go ahead and bomb Syria. And this country has killed children and infrastructure, all kinds of things. Can you explain why Syria is being attacked like this by the Western countries and of course some of the Middle Eastern countries, or what we think, like Saudi Arabia is, you know, death on Syria. What's going on, Ayad?
Yeah. First, thanks a lot for having me, dear Rasan. And I appreciate your program, your efforts. It's really wonderful to make people in Syria and America get friends.
Yes.
That's for all, for the beginning. You're right, Rasan. You are asking serious questions. Well, why? Actually, as a person who's been living all his life in Syria, I can see that the picture maybe in more details and in more depth. So, really, you may find it strange if I tell you that this war from the West and some regional countries on Syria hasn't started only 3 years ago in 2011, but actually it has started maybe a few decades ago. So it's very related to the Israeli-Palestinian issue, actually. If we go back to the war of 1967 and 1973, and the next wars on Lebanon, the Israeli invasion of South Lebanon in the 82 of last century, etc. So it's all connected. And maybe American people is not aware that Syria was under embargo and severe sanctions, not only now, but decades ago. I remember since I was a child in the 80s, we lived a severe crisis, economic crisis. So this is the reason. It's because Syria has its south territory called the Golan Heights occupied by Israel, and it is supporting what we call a resistance against occupation. So this is the reason. And by the way, just upon the American war on Iraq in 2003, Mr. Colin Powell, the foreign minister at that time of the U.S., visited Syrian President Assad and put on his table a list of conditions to be executed like an order that Syria has to achieve those conditions. Otherwise, it will be destroyed. And he told President Assad, now we are at your doors in Iraq. So it was as clear as this that the American government administration told Syria since 2003 that you have to do 1, 2, 3, otherwise you will pay. And when President Assad answered at that time, by the way, many American people is not aware of those details. He told Mr. Colin Powell, "Well, sorry, it's not me who do whatever he wants. It's Syrian people. So Syrian people will not accept those conditions, like break relations with resistance to liberate its land. So for that there was a law called like punishing Syria in 2004, I think, by American administration. So it goes back, the war goes back to those years.
Okay. So you're saying that one of the things then that Colin Powell demanded in his list of conditions was that Syria break any ties to the resistance in the Golan Heights area, the resistance of people against the occupying Israel.
Yes, yes. Exactly. And namely, to break its ties with Hezbollah in Lebanon and with Iran. Of course, with the Palestinian groups who reside in Damascus, of course, such as Hamas, whose political administration was in Damascus.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, here as a Syrian, let me tell you something. Syrian people is clearly disappointed about Hamas, namely, because unfortunately Hamas proved that it is motivated not by like patriotic or national motivations of resistance, but by its Muslim brotherhood. Syrian people, I can tell you, Syrian people now is very disappointed about Hamas.
Oh, okay. Now that will make sense, because while I don't I may not be a major fan of Hamas, but I do know that it was legally elected, which is more than you can say for like President Abbas.
This is true. Yeah, this is true.
But also I understand what you're saying as far as pretty much seems like being taken over by Muslim Brotherhood in ways.
Yeah.
Is speaking of that, Ayad, Is Syria more of a religion wise, what would you say? Because it seems like people are much freer than like the hardcore Muslims, and a lot of people really don't have a religion. So how could you explain that a little more?
Yeah, okay, this is interesting. Well, actually, you have all the colors of the spectrum in Syrian society. You have people who are very committed to their religion, whether they are Christian or Muslim or anything else, or you have also people who don't care about religion, very simply. The thing that I'd like to highlight here is that Syrian people, Syrian society in general, is secular. That means, do you know that here in Syria, in Syrian street, when we meet at the work, at the street, wherever, it's considered impolite to even mention the names of religions, or to ask somebody, are you Christian? This is considered impolite in Syrian values. So I think that this value, this Syrian value, matches the American value that I'm very much aware that American society is secular. So I think this is shared, and we were, by the way, raised during the few decades, last few decades, on these values. At Syrian TV, also it's the same. It's not as I work at Syrian TV. It's no way to mention that this group is X or that group is Y. You see, even here, I feel embarrassed to say to mention the names of religions or sects. But by the way, Syrians also are very disappointed about the language used by CNN and BBC and mainstream media. You know why? Because we feel insulted by CNN, BBC, Fox News, etc. Why? Because they look at us, at Syrian people, as groups, like discrete groups of religions. They say, for example, the X majority or the Y minority. And this is not acceptable for most of Syrians. Because we are Syrian, so I am, first of all, I am Syrian, but my religion, I keep it at home. I have friends, very good friends. Some of them are X, some others are Y, etc. So this is Syria that I am raised to.
Yes. Well, so it seems that the actual culture, it seems very similar to America in many ways, and I think people don't understand that
yes,
because mainstream media, like you mentioned, they're so intent on getting across the wrong message that they've given up the truth.
Yes, actually, this is true. For me, because I watch foreign media, I watch CNN, Fox News, BBC, etc. So really, really, I can touch this, and I believe that this is not by accident. Why American media anchors, American media presenters who belong to the American culture, why do they call us by religion names, by sect names, or even by ethnic names, Kurdish fighters in Kobani? But I know they are Syrian before anything else.
Exactly.
Yeah, what if I say the Catholic Marines fighters, for example?
Yeah.
This would sound, I think, funny to you, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, but it's a great analogy. That's true. And, you know, some of these news people, I mean, they're just ignorant. They have bought into what their bosses tell them. And
of course,
you know, we realize that the mainstream media in the United States is owned by, what, 5 or 6 different corporations, but they all have the same message that they're grinding out. So it's not that all of these newscasters, now some of them are quite aware, but some of them really believe what they're saying, which is even worse. That's just sad. But you have, I was just going to say, you've got more guts and stamina and courage than I do, because I don't, I got rid of my televisions, and I rarely watch, if I'm at someone's house, I'll watch the news because they are, but I get so upset. So you watching it all the time, I know it has to upset you.
Yeah, and here, let's be transparent, let's say, or objective. Maybe somebody who's political will criticize me and say, this Syrian man is like hiding the realities, all right? Because they have been trying in the media in BBC, France 24, Rai, Telegiornale, Deutsche Welle, all the Western mainstream media, they were trying to induce hatred in Syrian society by saying, for example, that it is a minority in Syria that is dominating the country and suppressing a Muslim majority, all right? For example, they say that the President Assad belongs to a minority, and this minority is dominating the Sunni majority. This is what they are saying. But by the way, something that is not told in the media, that Syrian army consists of all the spectrum of Syrian people. Syrian army reflects the spectrum in Syrian society. So Syrian army can anybody who has brain to imagine that an army, a complete army, is composed of only one sect, this is absurd. This is funny.
It is.
So,
it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
so.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
One thing. So it's ridiculous to say that the war in Syria is sectarian between one sect against another. That's it.
Yeah, but that's what we hear so often. That it's a it started out as a civil war between factions of Muslims, and I mean we know that some countries this may be a little truer, but it's never the whole story. So one thing that is interesting, I think, is. And, you know, when you know the truth, of course it makes sense, because the Syrian people really support President Assad. And because I've heard people say, maybe I don't support everything he does, but he's the president and we'll take care of our own issues, which I totally support. Why?
Yes.
You know, why do the Syrian people support him so much why would they? If all these horror stories about him using chemical weapons on his own people and on, if that were true, the Syrian people wouldn't be supporting him.
Yes, definitely. First thing, you are right. You said something very important that any Syrian, including me, may agree or disagree with the policy of Syrian President Mr. Bashar al-Assad. Well, when it comes to our country, when it comes to compare between your government and with extremists, okay? Extremists, let me say, whether they are Syrian or Libyan or Saudi. So here it's not about policy anymore. Now it's about your own country. So in this case, you will be at the front of your country. So also make this diagnostic of Syrian case. So now it's not about policy anymore. Now we are Syrian people, the majority of Syrian people, with Syrian army, with Syrian president Bashar al-Assad, on the same front, and we have extremists on the other front, and those extremists are supported by some intelligences in Paris, London, Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, Doha of Qatar, Istanbul of Turkey. So this is the right description of the Syrian war.
Okay.
Well, if I would like to tell you also to add something about sectarian war. Well, let me tell you that the mainstream media now it has become to me very obvious that the mainstream media in the West and in the East as well, in Saudi Arabia, because most of the mainstream media here in the Arabic world is funded by Gulf monarchies in Saudi Arabia and Qatar. So these media actually used the sectarian induction in order to push those extremists or fanatic Muslims to afford what they call jihad in Syria. So this was the game. They were crying on Syrian people, saying that Muslims are persecuted, are slaughtered, are killed in Syria by this infidel government or infidel regime, etc. So in this way, you can convince somebody living in his with his family, and even some European citizens from France or the UK to come for jihad in Syria.
Okay, that makes sense. Because people who are in power know the buzzwords. They know the points to press and the buttons to push. And so that is definitely one. So they could convince people who didn't take the time or whatever to check things out to come and fight.
Yes.
And pay them. I mean, they're also paid. And we know Saudi Arabia seems to have endless supplies of money that they're throwing toward the rebels. So sometimes they're called the Free Syrian Army, which is the rebels that were stirred up by the West and by the KSA. And so, we have to talk a bit about the beheadings, because that was an engineered, in my opinion, an engineered event to get the West riled up, because what we don't hear here in the West much at all is KSA, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, beheads people frequently. It's what they do.
Yes, definitely. Actually, there are several weird things and facts about Saudi Arabia. Even, do you know that Saudi Arabia only cancelled the enslavation regulation only, I think, 50 years ago? I mean, only 50 years ago, enslavation was legal. It was legal for a Saudi citizen to buy another human, to buy him, and he will be his master, and this human will be his slave. So also beheading was also legalized as a discipline in their kind of justice system.
To my way of thinking, and a lot of people in the West, is just barbaric, and cutting off hands or limbs, these kind of things. But you rarely hear about that in mainstream media. I think four people were beheaded right around the time that the beheading that we saw the video of, and all the four people in Saudi Arabia were beheaded. And unless you keep up with alternative media, you wouldn't have known.
Yeah, absolutely. And here also, I'd like to ask this simple question. While people in the US and Europe maybe got fed up with this term Syrian regime is bad, Syrian regime is brutal, Syrian regime is suppressing, etc., etc. Does anybody heard the term Saudi regime? I wonder how for the sake of Jesus, how Syrian government is called regime, while I know that now we have even opposition parties represented in the government and the parliament. We have opposition parliamentarians, we have opposition ministers, and we have many parties, many political parties, especially after the reforms adopted in 2012, that the ruling party, Baath Party, was having the privilege of considered as a leader party, but this has arrived to an end. Now there is no really ruling party or leader party. Now we have competitive political parties. While in Saudi Arabia, maybe not all American people know that Saudi Arabia haven't developed a constitution yet. They don't have even a constitution. So even the word political party is considered kind of haram in their culture, or against God. Imagine they consider if somebody believes in or would like to be a member of a political party, this is considered against the will of God. So what are we talking about? About what country? It belongs not to this century, for sure.
No.
But we cannot say in at CNN Saudi regime. No, we would say His Majesty the King. His Majesty the King, who met Mr. Kerry, for example.
Yeah, His Majesty the King, who is so out of touch with his own people, that, I mean, it doesn't matter. But yet the U.S. will align with the Saudis against a country like Syria that, like you mentioned, all these different political parties have a voice in the government, which is much more than in the United States. Because the United States has a uniparty made up of the Democrats and Republicans that are in control. And, I mean, you've got communists in government.
Yes.
Communist Party is like, bravo. So you have all of these things that supposedly the U.S. is supposed to and doesn't. So Syria is much more advanced in doing the will of the people than the U.S. And so for the U.S. to align with Saudi Arabia is just so bizarre to me. But of course, it's about the oil. It's about natural resources. There are several other countries, though, that are part of that alignment. I think, like, Turkey and France and the UK. Am I right?
Yes, yes, exactly. And Qatar and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Those are the main players. Of course, I think the maestro is the U.S. administration, and even I'm not American to judge, but according to my belief, what I believe, I believe that even we cannot say that Mr. Barack Obama is responsible, because really now I arrive to a belief that even American president has not the full authority to decide the policy of the U.S. I think that he is just a character that fit this period, that they need this character, somebody who belongs or having roots of from Africa or Islam, in order to be less severe with the Muslim world. But he's just performing the U.S. strategy that was drawn tens of years ago around the world. I know very well. I think everybody listened to that American American political man who said that the plan to invade seven countries was on the table.
Yes.
Before Obama came to power.
Exactly. I believe, wasn't that General Wesley Clark? I believe so.
Maybe.
Yeah, but no, what you're saying is true, because by the time any president gets to the White House, having been selected by those who select, he already knows that he's going to be a puppet. But I'm not letting him off, because he knew this going into it. And also, there's many things, like on the home front and worldwide, that Obama could have done differently, but didn't. He's totally played into this. But what you're saying is true. There's the people pulling the strings. And that is sort of, in my opinion, a multinational thing around the world that has decided, you know, that this and this and this is going to happen. But when I first saw that about the plan, to invade the seven countries, I was horrified. Because that wasn't, you know, this is not what I learned growing up in school about this country. And so I have had to relearn history from an angle of the truth instead of what I was taught, because the people who taught me, they did believe what they were teaching, but they just didn't know better. So when you start to find out different things, it just opens a whole new world. And you start looking at things with a broader perspective, and you understand how we got to some of these places. Some of it's still a mystery. I'd like to ask you about the chemical weapon thing, because, supposedly then they were going to go in and take out all of Assad's chemical factories because he had so many. Yeah, what about that, Ayad?
It's also interesting and important to know, because, you know, they used this story like to touch the human side of every person on Earth, in the world. Let me tell you, simply, when anybody thinks, even if, let's assume that the Syrian government is very bad and is evil, okay? According to the media story, that the war in Syria is between a bad regime, brutal regime, who is killing its people. Why? Because these people want to get rid of this government, but this government is stuck to power. This government doesn't want to go out from power. All right, fine. If we assume this, so this government should avoid anything that put it in danger, isn't it? This is very simple.
Sure.
According to this, it's stupid to say that Syrian government, Syrian president or Syrian army, given the order to use chemical weapons, being aware very much that Mr. Obama, okay, the president of the greatest power on earth, said this is a red line and it has not to be crossed several months ago. So when this government in Syria is struggling to stay in power and listen to Mr. Obama, to Mr. David Cameron, to Mr. Hollande or Sarkozy before, that talking many times about chemical weapons, that they are a red line, and if Syrian government uses crosses this line, we will bomb it. So it's stupid to think that it used it. This is first. It's logical. And second, let me confirm that this is not true about Syrian government. Syrian army, at the end, they are Syrian people, and they are living in Syria. They have brothers and cousins, parents in Syria. So they are not vampires. According to the media, I should imagine that Syrian army are like monsters, but they aren't. If we now go back, we will see that Syria wasn't never interested in using chemical weapons. Syria, one point to know, Syria stopped producing chemical weapons since 1997. Since 1997, Syria stopped producing chemical weapons. And second point, Syria only produced those weapons for defense issues, because when you have at your neighbor an army in the Israeli army, the IDF, right, that has tens of nuclear heads that are ready to bombard us.
Yeah.
All right, and it has the high tech, the ultimate high tech technology. So it's I think it's not a big crime to have some army or weapon to defend ourselves in case Israel invades Syria.
Exactly. Nobody can fault anyone who wants to defend themselves against an aggressor. That's ridiculous. But, you know, they kept mentioning the weapons, the chemical weapons. And, you know, we heard all of this years ago with Iraq, the about all the chemical weapons that they never found. So it seems like it's just history repeating itself.
This is true. So I think it has become obvious that this story of weapons of mass destruction and now chemical weapons with Syria is just a pretext or a title in order to attack Syria, but also for people who are caring about the details, because now I told you a few reasons in general that dismantle this story, but I'm also ready, if the time is enough, also to go back to every detail. But in brief, I can tell that 5 months before the that notorious accident, the chemical attack in Eastern Ghouta in Damascus occurred in July 2013. So 5 months before, that is in March 2013, there was an attack in Aleppo, a quarter called Khan al-Assal, an attack against Syrian army who had just liberated this quarter, and 16 soldiers were killed by the so-called rebels. So at that time, it was Syrian government who demanded at Security Council, demanded to bring a team of inspectors to make a kind of inquiry or investigation in this accident. And it took 5 months of complicated negotiations through Russia in order to agree on the authorities of these conditions. Because, as you mentioned, history repeats itself. The U.S., U.K. and France tried to take advantage of this Syrian demand very, very in a very smart way to say, okay, you want a team to come to Syria? Okay, we love this such kind of demands. We will send a team, but this team will have full authorities to investigate in every meter squared in Syria, even in maybe underground below the presidential palace. You see, they so it was complicated to reach a formula of the authorities. And at the end, here you go. Okay, the team had come in, I think, in August at that time. And the next day, there was this breaking news on Al Jazeera, on CNN, France 24, all the media that there was a massacre of chemical attacks perpetuated immediately. Immediately, the accusation was ready that it was perpetuated by what they say, what they call Syrian regime. And me, as a Syrian citizen, really as a Syrian citizen, I will not forgive those who induced hatred. I will not forgive Mr. David Cameron. I will not forgive Mr. Hollande, who are just puppets, who said things only to induce hatred and to induce all the armies, all the extremists in the world to come and kill us.
Yes, I mean, because they knew better. They absolutely knew better. It wasn't any kind of mistake that they made. They knew. But like you say, they did it intentionally with the purpose of inducing hatred and division. So yeah. There's no excuse for them.
This is, you know, dear Rasan, this is the question that I think between in myself that is really David Cameron believing what he's saying, or he knows the truth? I'm not sure. I don't know. If he really knows that he's saying fake things, so this is a crime. Yeah. And if he doesn't, this means that he is stupid, that he believes his media.
Right. Yeah. If he actually believes it, well, then he's just showing his ignorance. But I do think that he knows and knows what he's doing. This is just another form of the false flag kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. Actually, false flag, all those massacres that you asked me, how can Syrian people support his president after all these horror? Actually, because we are living on Earth. So when somebody is killed by those terrorists and extremists, and then it doesn't matter if on Al Jazeera or on CNN they said that he was killed by the brutal regime because he demonstrated for democracy, but this won't change the truth at his home. His family will know the truth.
He's still just as dead. It's the whole thing, and it's so hard for some people to understand that, you know, we're all humans and we're all related. We're all part of the same entity, the same being, and all of this divisiveness, you know, we have to stop it. We have to stop letting ourselves be played as so-and-so against so-and-so, whether it's religion, country, sex, whatever. You know, we're all in it together. And I just find it appalling that people try to divide other people the way they do.
Here I'd like to, I'm very enthusiastic to jump in and tell you something in this regard. I would like to listeners, respectful listeners, to know that I was, before the crisis in Syria, before 2011, what I was doing, I was teaching physics and mathematics, I am a kind of man who is known by his friends that I am kind of westernized, or that I am a fan of European mentality and American mentality, that I like American way of life and American values. So it's a pity, after I was teaching my students, telling my students the wonderful experiments done by NASA, by the aerospace achievements in astronomy, for example, I was telling my friend about how developed are the projects of engineers at Massachusetts Institute for IT, for example, in robotics.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Now I lost my job because of this war. So now instead I am I turned into a journalist, and now I found myself obliged to talk about the smart things that Mr. Obama did instead of talking about NASA and MIT. Massachusetts Institute, and about Michigan, about robotics, etc. Now I am telling about the genius achievements of Obama and David Cameron and Hollande.
That's so ironical. Yes, because and what you were teaching your students is, I mean, true, because MIT, lots of good things have come out of there. And NASA, well, it's phenomenal. And every time something, you know,
yeah.
I wish that I would have studied more science
yeah,
things.
Yeah, I wish
to
too.
People. Yeah, NASA's still doing wonderful things, but isn't it ironical, that now you're talking about all these other things on the air, and what was it, I mean, from being a teacher to being the producer and director on Syrian TV, was there much of a, was it hard to cross over?
Yeah. Okay. Nobody thought that I would become a journalist, and neither I. I never imagined that I would work one day as a producer or a journalist. This is really. But actually, I am doing that because I have a message to deliver. I just want to tell truth. Well, now I don't regret anyway, because now I am talking to you. So I think, it's not bad. It's not a bad job to be a journalist, because we are... it's really maybe any job can be great when you have a message. So I think journalism really is great when you have a message to do honestly, not to be a mercenary to get paid by CNN or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. That's true, because like you were teaching the truth. And you were affecting these students, and now you're teaching the truth again, and you're affecting people around the world. So, you know, your message is definitely important. I mean, it's about our lives, and so you know all the people you can reach. And I do want to say that you have a Facebook page called Foreign Media.
Here, let me just be accurate. This page belongs to the department where I work at Syrian TV, called Foreign Media. But I am a co-administrator of this page, and I would like to say, send my regards also to my director. She is very nice. Her name is Lena Mabardi. And she's, by the way, from Armenian origins. Here, let me tell you that Syria, it's interesting to know that Syria has always been a refuge to people who fled from violence. So maybe American people don't know this, that now there are maybe some 100 or 200,000 Armenian people who fled the Ottoman massacres one century ago, when Ottomans committed massacres against Armenian people. So they fled their lands and came to Syria, and now they have become Syrian. And we are very happy and proud to have them as Syrian citizens.
No, that's excellent, and I did not know. So, you know, there's so many things about Syria that people don't know. Like you're saying, okay, it's been a refuge for people fleeing other countries where they were persecuted and things. So,
Actually, Syria worked in silence during the American war in Iraq. The number of Iraqi refugees attended 4 million of Iraqi refugees. And Syria didn't say a word to the UN begging for money. As now, our neighbors, Jordan and Turkey, are begging the UN to fund them money for camps for Syrian people.
Exactly. I've seen that. Yeah, that's a whole other thing. I do want to tell our listeners also that you've done some interviews with Rye Dawson on YouTube, and I want people to check those out. And your latest...
To Ryan Dawson.
Yes, and I'll put the latest one on the Aramarte Feel Facebook page when we're through here, because it's we want to get the message out. So it's a good thing that you're very open and you have no qualms about telling it like it is. So right before we close, Ayad, I'm so glad you came on. What kind of a message would you have to give, not just to the American people, but because we have listeners elsewhere? What message do you have for us?
All right. First message is a message of love, that that Syrian people are not uneducated. Syrian people are highly educated, and when they come out, they are successful. So, Syrian people in general are secular, friendly, very generous. So, I just have one word that really we don't deserve what's happening to us. We don't deserve that. We are watching our country destroyed in front of our eyes. After Syria ranked second safest country, according to an American magazine in 2010. And now we are maybe a second country, but in the opposite direction.
That's horrible. That's horrible. And through no fault of your own, you know, that's like it just happened to you because people decided, you know, that this is what was going to happen and they were going to get around it. They were going to bomb and destroy infrastructures, and I know that sometimes if you were not an engineer, you wouldn't be online sometimes because there's the electricity goes out quite a bit, but you have things rigged up with car batteries, I believe.
And this is true.
Yeah, which is wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful you have the ability. So I think every journalist probably should take some lessons from you, you know, so that when the main power goes out, you know, you still have the capabilities. So I'm going to say goodbye for now, Ayad, but I hope that you'll come back and talk with us, because there's so many things that we can learn. I mean, as far as the actual truth goes, and not the things that we've been hearing in mainstream media. So
hugs for you. I want to thank you very much, Ratan, and bye-bye for everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Now go to sleep, right?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Good night.
Good night.
And I do want to say that Progress Toward Democracy will return next week.